Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. You're tuning to the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the latest developments in South Africa's bid to have it be included in the AGOA extension. It seems as though that is back on the table now that the United States government has reopened. They are looking at these and other matters, and there are various calls that South Africa should potentially be excluded from this agreement going forward. We're going to take a look at that and see what we make of those developments. Then we have a conversation taking a look at the jobs market in South Africa, particularly tech jobs and remote jobs. There's some interesting data out of the team at PNET around where some employers are potentially looking for services and vacancies and which sectors seem to be doing rather well. Then we have a conversation with Deal Leaders International's Andrew Ballman, taking a look at some interesting transactional activity between Mr. Price and their respective acquisition deal that's on the table, as well as we're taking a look at the Anglo-Tech merger, if we have a time for that. Then we have a conversation taking a look at investment behavior, particularly looking at how your childhood attachment styles could potentially influence your investment decision making. We're going to speak to the team at Satrix around that and see what we make of that. And then, because it's Wednesday, we're going to wrap up the show with an executive lounge conversation. We're going to get to know the managing director of SuperQuick South Africa a little bit better, Mike Humphreys. He joins me in studio to share some insights around his life.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick off the show, as we always do, with a sense of market movements throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by VIP client manager at Prime XBT, Kerabile Nonyana, to take a look at market movements and see what we make of them. Lovely having you on the show, as always. Thanks so much for the time. Let's perhaps start the conversation with the interesting day that was on the equities front. Local markets seemingly faring rather well, but it seems to be a bit of a mixed bag across international waters, with European markets being a bit mixed, Asian markets a bit mixed, even a US markets, the Nasdaq slightly down, whereas the S&P is in the green.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at the Dow Jones as well in the green, I think it's really confusing. And I think it shows of where the market is on terms of footing. It's not on firm footing, just purely because we're waiting for the meeting, which is happening in about 3 hours from the FOMC. I think the market has already discounted the fact that there will be a quarter point cut. But I think what's very concerning has been with the messages coming out of the members of the FOMC. Because one thing that I have realized with central banks around the world, as much as they're independent, they like unanimous decisions. They don't like to be fractures. So currently in the moment, in the FOMC, there are factions which are currently, one are looking at inflation, the other are looking at the labor market. And currently they're sitting on tenterhooks, thinking about what's really next in terms of the decisions which are going to come out in the first few quarters of 2026.
Yeah, you touched on the US markets and the fact that that interest rate decision that is taking place later this evening, markets have all but priced in. I'm looking at the RAND at the moment, 17 RAND on the dot against the US dollar, holding its ground, coming back above that 17 level. We did see a dip as low as 16.90 in this month alone. Is there an expectation from a rate cut perspective or from a US perspective that the dollar will continue to move if we see a decision that goes either way? I mean, if it is priced in, how much of it is still going to be felt in the US dollar at this stage?
To be perfectly honest, Jimmy, I've been doing some calculations in terms of looking at implied inflation in the US Fed fund rate futures. And when I look at the inflation, the expected implied inflation, it's sitting between 2.19 and 2.32 on the longer end of the yield curve. So now when you ask yourself the question that essentially the Fed looks at keeping inflation anchored around 2%, if you're 0.19% or 0.32% on the longer end away from from where you'd expect inflation to be. You'd probably expect that there'd be more rate cuts. And I think when we're looking also at labor data, there's nothing that's really been quite concerning, because I think it's still in the no hire, no fire. So with my anticipation that there'll be more rate cuts, I think it's leading to the market just keeping on selling the dollar. I think the dollar reached an inflection point on or about last week, Friday, where there was a convergence on the MACD. But I think since then, there's been a pickup in the dollar. But going into the start of today's trading session, we saw some dollar weakness in anticipation of a more, I think, less hawkish tone from the FOMC when we read in the balance of forces. So we started to see a little bit more selling of the dollar. And that's come through into our rand, with the rand breaching the 17 in and about an hour ago. And I think you'll continue to see it strengthen going through into the night.
Speaking of going into the night, Akia, I know you and I keep an eye on the FOMC statement that follows that interest rate decision, especially given that it contains information like the dot plot and what the Fed chairs are thinking, or Fed governors rather, might be thinking around the interest rate and inflation conversation. Do we think that tonight's statement could be a catalyst to potentially seeing that Santa rally that we've been waiting for in markets? Equity markets have been on almost a knife edge, up one day, down the next day, very volatile, profit-taking, almost waiting for something to kick them off in the December period. And I guess the question then is, are we still going to get that December move, or have we gotten it throughout the year and now perhaps markets might be a bit exhausted?
I think it's something different that's going to lead to the Santa rally. I think if you look back about 10 days ago, the Fed ended quantitative tightening. I think since the beginning of 2022, what the Fed has been doing is trying to reduce its balance sheet. I mean, at the beginning of 2022, they had assets of circa $8.5 trillion, and they've reduced it to about $6 trillion. And in a recent article that I penned, I look at all the scenarios when quantitative tightening happened. And for the next 3 weeks after quantitative tightening ended or was paused, you saw a rally in risk assets across the globe. And I think that, for me, is what's going to lead us to that Santa rally more than what is going to be said at the FOMC. Do I think it's important to listen to what they say at the FOMC? Yes, I think it is, to listen to tonality more than anything else. But I think with the Fed ending quantitative tightening, they have more tools within their toolbox in order to influence the financial conditions. And those financial conditions are going to seep through into risk assets and across the board, from digital assets to equities and equities around the globe.
Yeah, let's wrap up our conversation taking a look at the Brent crude price dipping below $62 a barrel. We're around $61.50 at the moment. We know, of course, that the $60 support level has been quite supportive of the oil price of late. But we also know that we haven't really had a lot of muscle to punch back above $65 to $70. And I suppose this is a nice range for countries like South Africa that are net fuel importers, for what we look looking for from a trade perspective. Are we comfortable around $60 a barrel here?
I think we're comfortable around $60 a barrel, because I made an example to one of our colleagues, Jimmy, that the majority of oil producers are countries which have zero taxes, meaning that they raise their revenue by selling oil. So even if oil is going down in terms of price, they need to maintain the revenue that they have in order to influence and pay for things within those economies. So right now, when we're looking at the supply of oil, there's a oil glut in the world. But I was listening to an interesting hedge fund manager in the US, and he's of the belief that oil is going to be the new gold of 2026. And he does anticipate that there will be economic growth, as well as the taps coming down into the second quarter, that will buoy the price of oil going into that second quarter. So I'm in a wait and see approach right now with the price of oil. I think it's found a good consolidation range right here, because even if you're looking technically right now, we're sitting at moving averages which are at about 64 for the 100-day moving average, and at about 66 33 for the 50-day moving average, and it just sits below the 20-day moving average at about 62. So I think these are the ranges that it's going to consolidate in the first quarter of the year, and maybe we might see a breakout going into mid-year next year.
Looks like we're in for an interesting end to the 2025 calendar year. We'll see what developments continue to shape the markets and how they continue to influence investor decisions. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the VIP client manager at Prime XPT, Kerabile Nonyana, for joining us to take a look at market movements and what lies ahead in the form of the interest rate decision out of the US Fed later on tonight.
On the farm, every season brings challenges. Will the rain come? Will the soil deliver enough? But I'm not facing those challenges alone. With Omnia by my side, I receive more than fertilizer. I have access to science, innovative solutions, and people who care about my success.
At Omnia, your best harvest is our greatest achievement. Together we grow more than crops, we grow futures. Contact Omnia today and start growing your future.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
South Africa continues to be in a precarious position with the United States, and the latest developments stem around the AGOA agreement. That agreement, of course, came to an end at the end of September of this year. At that time, the US government was in shutdown, and so there was no reasonable expectation that it would be extended or renegotiated. It seems as though now that is coming back into focus, and a lot of that conversation is centered around whether or not the United States would like South Africa to continue to benefit from that arrangement, or if we should have our own arrangement. We're going to be taking a look at this in the context of the South Africa-US relationship with the economist and founder at Pan-African Investments, Dr. Iraj Abedian. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of it. Dr. Iraj, thanks as always for the time. Lovely having you on the show. I think we've all reached our limit around the tensions between South Africa and the United States, particularly given that the tensions stem from issues that we have struggled to make sense of. AGOA, on the other hand, is an agreement we knew was coming to an end and needed to be discussed and reviewed. I want to get your thoughts initially around whether or not this is still a relevant conversation for South Africa.
And thank you very much, Jimmy. Good talking with you again, and greeting to our listeners. I think it is very important that even if it's not AGOA as we know it, the relationship, the trade relationship, and the broader diplomatic relationship with the United States is absolute supreme importance for South Africa, because the United States is the largest trading partner as regards value-added products. Not minerals, not low-wage, low-value, unbeneficiated, basically commodities. But when it comes to manufactured products, the United States is by far the largest. And, of course, when it comes to the financial market, as you would know, even more important. So I think we need to put it in the context of the significance of the United States trade and investment, within which both diplomatic and trade relationships need to be structured. So it is important. We need to pay attention to it. And there is real concern. As you said, we are all tired of it. We've been going around this roller coaster for a while. A lot of facts and fictions are mixed up. But the reality is that on our side, we have been, in my view, a lot less proactive than we should have been, and we could have been. For example, as we speak, we don't have an ambassador in the United States, we don't have a credible trade mission there, etc., etc., and all of these count against us.
Dr. Iraj, how much of that is us being flat-footed and reactive, and how much of it is just a lack of willingness from the United States to participate in the conversation? We've heard time and time again that the United States, regardless of what they are told by South Africa, come up with their own conclusions and formulate their own opinions on what is taking place here, even without consulting South Africa on the matter. How much of it is really up to us to influence at this stage, and is it something that we, or what could we be doing more?
Yeah, I think the important emphasis that you mentioned at this stage, remember this flat-footed status that we found ourselves began not with President Trump, began at the time of Joe Biden in the last couple of months of the back foot already at that time. And since then, we have not moved and not be behind the curve. So the answer to your question is depends where you're sitting. Your perspective would differ. My view is that we were pushed back already before Trump came in. We were betting that Trump would not come in. He did. And therefore, ever since, we've been doing catch-up work. And that is that's a political issue. But from an economic point of view, both for the United States and for South Africa, it's a significant trade and investment relationship. And unfortunately, we've got caught, we as South Africans and South African economy is caught hostage to this cross-Atlantic ideological perspective that Trump has taken a particular position and we playing a different game. And therefore, that gap needs to be bridged. We are on the back foot, so we need to put a lot more into it to catch up and to find a smart solution to get back on the same page, because we cannot wait for Trump, because Trump knows and his administration knows that we are on the back foot. They've got a lot of not about some of the stuff that catches the so-called white genocide and all that stuff. Those are hypes, but there are real issues of geopolitical and economic nature that we should deal with, and unless we deal with it expeditiously, we're going to be left out again and remain on the back foot.
Dr. Iraj, what do we have left in our arsenal? If we are to look at the AGOA extension as an example, in the event that we do not get afforded an extension, or we get it afforded a new agreement that isn't in South Africa's favor necessarily, or is less lucrative than the AGOA agreement, we've already started expanding or exploring other markets. But from a trade and economic relationship perspective, what else do we have left that we can then bring to the table to perhaps rebalance the negotiations and perhaps give us a better fighting chance at resolving this?
I think, as I understand it, the major concern that Americans have is about what they call it non-trade barriers. And that is something that we have to address. America has huge interest in, from an investment point of view and from a technological point of view, to partner with South Africa. So what we have are three things in my view. One is from a geopolitical point of view, we need to really reset a neutral position, a non-dependent nationalistic as opposed to ideological position. We need to focus exclusively on what is good for South Africa, not what's good for other nations and other ideologies and other paradigms that may have historically be relevant, but today in the 21st century, they are not. So one benefit we have, which is geopolitically very important, we need to put that on the table and neutralize it so that Americans don't feel fear. Secondly, we have a lot of minerals, rare minerals, and the futuristic kind of input into the modern economy, AI-driven, all of that. We need to put it in the context. And thirdly, we need to look at the purely investment opportunities that Americans are looking for in a whole lot of areas, not just South Africa alone, but Southern Africa, and not only in the African continent. South Africa is an important diversified industrial economy, but in the SADC even more so, and American investments, particularly in the energy sector, in Namibia, in Mozambique, these are important future prospects for making wealth, creating opportunities, and positioning, from a geopolitical point of view, positioning the big powers in the hub of global unfolding economy. And those are in our favor. We need to play it, but not in favor of one group as opposed to the other, and rather in terms of what's best for the South African economy.
We need to think about what is best for the South African economy and make proactive decisions to protect that. That is the message from the economist and founder at Pan African Investments, Dr. Iraj Abedian, who joined me to take a look at the strained relationships between South Africa and the US and how that could potentially impact South Africa's inclusion in the amended AGOA agreement.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We are taking a look at the world of work, particularly the job market. It seems as though there has been quite a recovery, or at least signs of a recovery in the job market, more particularly focused around remote jobs and tech jobs in South Africa. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the head of data insights at PNET, Paul Burney, joins me on the line now to see what we make of this data. Paul, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start the conversation with perhaps just how the job market has shaped up over the 2025 year. It's been quite an eventful year. Has the job market seen some positivity as a result of that?
Well, let me start by just summarizing the year in its entirety as volatile. It's the one word I've got. It's been up and down pretty much every month in terms of what we've been seeing in our data that we record across our PNET platform. The good news, Jimmy, is that the last 2 months are showing some really positive signs, and both months have recorded positive growth. Our last month of recording was August, and that was 7% up year on year. And now looking at September, we are 7% up on month on month and 3% up year on year. Last month, 7% up year on year. This month, we're seeing 3% up year on year.
Paul, what are some of the areas of focus here? I can imagine tech jobs would be one. We do live in a very digital age, more so today than we did possibly several years ago. But what are some of the areas of focus that you're seeing from an employer perspective that they are looking to fill vacancies in?
Good question, and 100% leading with the fact that tech is showing probably the biggest sign of growth, and we can touch on that in a moment, is really an important point that you make. But the other jobs that we are seeing that are coming into the fore are quite diverse. If we look at quality control jobs within the manufacturing and assembly job sector, and team leaders and supervisors within business and management, even human resources has shown some really, really good positive growth. As has cost management and accounting, and those are trending jobs over the last month. If we look at actual job sectors, what our report from this last month is showing is it's medical and health, as well as the information technology jobs that you've already mentioned, and sales jobs that have actually showed the big demand. And interestingly, when you go into medical and health, we're looking at about a 25% growth year on year in that sector. IT, we're reporting is 18% up year on year. And sales, we are at 18% year on year also. So some really positive stuff coming through there. And I think, you know, the fact that sales is coming through also shows that there's a demand, there's a consumer demand. And if we are listening to the news during the course of today and understanding that consumer confidence is up, business confidence is up, those are all good indicators for a positive end to this year of ours.
Paul, let's take a look at remote working. It seems as though that has been on the rise as well. And I can't help but wonder whether or not South Africa is better positioned than other countries for remote hiring. I've been seeing a lot of remote offers coming through on various platforms, including PNET. And for me, I think what stands out there is South Africa's geographical location allows it to attract remote work from both the eastern side of the world as well as the western side. How are you guys seeing that data?
It's very interesting that you've asked that question, Jimmy. There are two ways to it. Anecdotally, I can answer that we're seeing an influx of tech skills and all kinds of skills coming into South Africa. And I think that's across the board, but focusing specifically on the Cape region. I know the Cape has specifically set itself up as a important hub for sort of digital nomad type employment. So we are definitely seeing that there's a growth in terms of the interest of people coming into South Africa. What we look at on our platforms is the reverse, the data that's telling us what is being advertised on our platform in terms of the opportunities for remote work. And it's, again, very interesting from the fact that clearly over COVID, we went 100% into remote work. And then shortly after we sort of got through the pandemic, there was that massive call back to the office. And many, many organizations in South Africa and around the world started calling their people back into the office. For the first time this year, though, we've started to see the trend reverse slightly. And by reverse, I mean that we're seeing more and more remote type opportunities being advertised again. And it's a moderate sort of increase. But over the last 5 months, we've seen a 0.5% increase in remote opportunities. So it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's the first time that we've seen this trend. And I think what's happening there is that there are companies that are starting to recognize that remote work actually comes as a benefit to many employees, and they are starting to offer it, and they should be offering it as a benefit to try and attract some top talent. Specifically, when we look at the types of jobs that have been advertised for remote work, it is, as you would rightly imagine, a lot of the tech-based jobs, your software developers, your data analysts, business analysts, and systems and network administrators. At the top of the list, the software developers, about 13% of all jobs advertised across our platform are for remote or hybrid type work at the moment. But the other ones that are worth mentioning are jobs like personal assistants. 12% of those jobs are remote. Customer support agents, business development agents, sales representatives and consultants, and even we're seeing a greater sort of increase in middle and department manager roles being advertised as remote. It's a good mix, and I think it is an indication of things to come. We will have remote work being part of our benefit packages that we get when we join sort of top companies.
Speaking of things to come, Paul, let's leave the conversation by taking a look at some of the trends you expect to continue into the 2026 calendar year. We know that the unemployment situation in South Africa is quite a serious one, and there are many people out there looking for work. What do you think would be influencing the hiring patterns, perhaps, or the job opportunities going into the new year?
Jimmy, I think first and foremost, what we're hoping is the continuation of the trend that we've seen through these last couple of months of this year with the year-on-year increases in the jobs economy. What I am expecting to see is that we're going to have an acceleration of the demand for tech-type skills. We've seen it quite considerably in some skills, specifically if we're looking at things like business or positions like business analysts and data scientists and data engineers. Yeah, there have been significant increases in the demand for those types of roles. So by way of an example, business analysts roles are up 102% over the course of this year. So that's a significant increase. Data scientists are up 48%. Our systems and network administrators who manage our infrastructure and security are up 38%. The big one is software developers. It's up 34% in terms of demand, but for the first time in 2.5 years, it's actually risen to the top of the list of the most in-demand job within South Africa at the moment. So those people that were that are in the tech space, I think are really well positioned into the new year. I think we're going to see the continuation of this demand, specifically as we accelerate into what I refer to as our new world of work, which fundamentally is built around software development, AI, machine learning, robotics, and all things technical. So I'm expecting that we're going to see this growth continue in that into the 2026 calendar year.
Some very interesting insights around the job market and what types of opportunities are currently out there, at least from the team at PNET. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Paul Byrne for those insights and for the time. He's the head of data insights at PNET, joining us to take a look at what their platform has been reflecting from a jobs perspective.
Here's the thing about running a business. It needs constant connection with reliable communication between you, your staff, and customers. That's why the right partnership matters. Get Cloud PABX from Telkom Business, a unified communication solution that makes connecting easy from just 161 rands per month.
This summer, your business deserves the best. Visit telkom.co.za/business for deals that keep your business online all the time. T's and C's apply. Telkom Business. Possible begins here.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Mr. Price today announced that they would be looking to acquire a German-based company known as Pegasus Group Holdings. It trades as NKD in the retail space, a deal that would potentially be worth just shy of 10 billion rand. The market had its own thoughts and reflections around that, as reflected in the Mr. Price share price on the day's trade. But alongside that, we know that there are other deals that have been in the works from various companies, the likes of Anglo American and Tech Resources. Resources looking to expand their copper operations in Chile and Peru. We're going to be taking a look at these transactions in a bit more detail with our resident M&A and deals specialist, the chief executive for corporate and advisory at Deal Leaders International, Andrew Ballman. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of these transactions. Andrew, always lovely catching up, especially when exciting conversations are involved. Let's perhaps start our conversation with the Mr. Price acquisition announcement. One would think this would be a good thing from a business perspective. The market initially not having the most positive reaction, the share price down almost 10% at one stage on the day's trade. What do you make of the announcement itself?
Jamie, I agree with you. I think it's been quite an interesting and I'm sure a stressful day for the Mr. Price directors. I think the fundamentals should have come across as being positive, but you know, as you mentioned, the share price is down and the reaction's poor. And I think a lot of it is around the sentiment of, you know, it's a big number relative to the market cap of the group. It's a bold move, and many others from a South African perspective have crossed border and failed, you know, and I think that's where some of the repricing is coming in, because it does change the risk profile. And, you know, we know that other markets are not necessarily more stable, but it's a bold move. And, you know, I really hope from their perspective, they've always been very positive from an analyst's and investor perspective. So I'm hoping that the strategy is a good one and it diversifies their growth into Europe and Eastern Europe. But yeah, look, initial reactions aren't great, and let's see how it plays out.
Speaking of diversification into Europe, Andrew, I want to get your thoughts around that. A lot of companies have tried, some companies have succeeded, some companies have failed. Is it still as attractive an attractive destination as it used to be? And are there other opportunities that might be a bit better suited for some other companies?
Yeah, look, I was surprised. You know, I don't think Europe is what it used to be, you know, and I think, you know, particularly if you're looking from an Eastern Europe perspective, there's still the fallout from the Ukraine war, and Europe's got its own challenges on multiple fronts. So it's a very interesting move, because, you know, typically if I were to wear an M&A hat, one looks for growth. And diversification and synergies and all of those elements. And going into those markets is a very different market. You know, there's no obvious synergies between, you know, the two groups. So it's interesting, because if I look at the backbone of how Mr. Price built up a very successful business in this part of the world, you know, it doesn't mean one has to default into Africa, because there's just as many war stories in Africa as other first world countries. But, you know, potentially looking at other emerging markets, South America or whatever it may be. So it is an interesting move, because also it is such a big move. You know, I could understand a foray kind of dipping your toe in the water and trying to, you know, see how it plays out, understand the markets. But like I said, hopefully they've got insights and intelligence. We don't, but it is a surprising move. And yeah, look, I mean, one's always got their views and opinions, but it definitely wouldn't have been my destination of choice for such a material investment.
Andrew, let's shift focus and take a look at the Anglo-American and Teck Resources relationship that has been growing over the last couple of months. And we finally have approval from the shareholders on both sides to proceed with the deal. At the time when we kind of started looking at this deal around September 9th, when it was announced, we had a $50 billion odd valuation on what this deal would be worth. We're looking at copper mines in Chile and Peru. We know Anglo-American has been the subject of bids from BHP, as well as an unbundling of their own that they've undergone. Take me through your thoughts around this strategic partnership and what it means for their increased exposure into the copper space, which we know BHP was after Anglo for that very reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, mergers are always quite interesting, and I think, you know, you approach it almost as a merger of equals, if you like. I think it does make sense. I think, you know, Anglo had to do something. I think with, you know, the build-up, as you mentioned, with all the potential suitors and the potential deals, it had to play out in a way that they couldn't just leave it and not do anything. So I think I think it makes sense. I think the diversification is a good play, you know, as you mentioned. I think with the focus and the shift, including copper and iron ore and zinc and, you know, and other metals, you know, from a diversification perspective is a good one. I think it'll be, you know, it's always good to spread risk, as well as moving into, you know, like copper being a high demand commodity. I think from a shareholder perspective, it makes sense. I think they also, you know, they still insist that they're committed to South Africa. And from that perspective, it's really, yeah, very interesting. I think it's a calculated move, and I think that's very positive. And I think hopefully it'll play out, you know, from an overall share and valuation perspective moving forward.
We lost you there for a second, Andrew, but I wanted to wrap up the conversation taking a look at 2026. You and I are always catching up around these sorts of transactions as they happen. Do you foresee 2026 being a bigger year for these types of transactions, understanding that in some cases valuations might be understated for some assets? It could be a good opportunity to pick up some really depressed assets in certain markets. How are you seeing the potential for deal flow going into the new year?
Yeah, look, I'm bullish. I think there is. I think there's good runway. I think both in the private and the mega deal market. I think there's you know room for consolidation. Looking for bolt-on and diversification opportunities. I do think you're right. I think there's some good opportunities around. Potentially, you know, getting deals at a good valuation. I think it's set for a good year. Like we saw this year, I think there's been a good momentum build up towards the end of the year, and I think that's going to carry forward in into 2026. And yeah, let's everything's pointing in the right direction. Let's hope we just don't have any surprises in the first quarter and it plays out the way we hope it will.
Lots out there for markets to make sense of, including a transaction that seemingly is between Transnet and ICTSI. They've entered into a 25-year port agreement that is worth around $650 million. We'll look at that perhaps at another time, but for now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much, as always, for the time and for the insights to Andrew Ballman, the Chief Executive for Corporate and Advisory at Deal Leaders International, for joining us to take a look at some interesting M&A activity and what 2026 could potentially hold.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain. And the company's called Mesh Trade to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Wednesdays on this show are reserved for consumer awareness conversations in part, and this one is a bit of a consumer conversation, but also a bit of a personal finance conversation. So that's why it's happening today and not perhaps on a Monday. We're going to be taking a look at some behavioral patterns that could potentially influence some of the financial decisions and investing decisions that we make. In particular, we're going to be taking a look at attachment styles and what that means from an investment perspective. Joined on the line by Senior Portfolio Manager at Satrix, Lauren Jacobs, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Lauren, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. What are attachment styles?
You know, Jimmy, our earliest relationships, and those being the relationships that we have with our primary caregivers, those are the relationships that shape how we feel about safety, trust, and control. And in the future, it can also talk to how we relate to money. And when we describe our attachment styles, we talk about either being securely attached. So when you have a caregiver who is reliable and responsive, you tend to be securely attached and you feel comfortable in the future with planning your financial journey, and you're open to talking about money and you're transparent about money. But when you're anxiously attached when you are younger, and that's formed really through inconsistent caregiving, which could lead to worrying about money, avoiding tough financial conversations, and also maybe overspending for status reasons, One of the other attachment styles that we talk about is avoidant attachment, and that's formed when caregivers are emotionally distant. Avoidant attached people prefer to be independent. They don't want help from anyone, and sometimes even to a point of being very secretive about the financial journey. And then also when caregivers are both comforting, and sometimes it's linked to a trauma, it can really lead to being, you know, disorganized in terms of your attachment to money. So maybe that you're inconsistent around how you save or invest, or you have very impulsive financial behavior. But the main thing is that, you know, these patterns show up in the way we manage money. So it shows up in the way we take risks. Maybe we avoid conversations, or we're chasing quick wins. And it's really about being aware that these styles exist, and that we can forge a path that reflects, you know, the future you want, and not just the past that you've been living.
Lauren, so then how do I determine what my attachment style is, and by extension, then determine how I relate to money? And if I have a particular attachment style, is it even possible to change it?
It takes really a point where you need to stop and reflect, because it's really around emotion, because the emotion is what drives your financial decision. And from there, you can build healthy habits, because you need to think about, am I talking transparently around whether, you know, having regular check-ins around money with your advisor or your partners? And if I understand that I'm maybe anxiously attached, am I educating myself? So am I trying to take the worry away by using resources on the internet or through an advisor? You know, educating yourself around money and money habits. And then if we think about avoidant attachment, to consider maybe automating your financial decisions. So setting up debit orders to remove any emotion from the investing. So it's, you know, you're just being automatic about your investment every month. And then also just looking at diversifying, because you may not feel comfortable with putting all your eggs in one basket because you're not securely attached to your money. And yeah, that could offer you really liquidity and transparency around your finances. So it's just to again, you know, reflect on the emotion that comes to you when you have to make any sort of financial decision, and build around that.
Lauren, are there easy wins from a behavioral perspective that I can implement to perhaps get rid of some of the bad habits? Or if I don't really have bad habits but might want to develop good habits, are there kind of easy sort of steps to take that would allow someone to perhaps better navigate the behavioral side of, or the psychological side of, their financial decisions?
It's really firstly about education. I think in this day and age, there are so many options available to you to educate yourself around how can I invest, or how can I budget, or what is a financial journey? How do I plan ahead, you know, for 3 years from now, for 5, for 10 years from now? So that is one of the first things that I would say to anybody. Take the time to educate yourself, because without the education, you can't make an informed decision. And also, there are people out there that you can rely on to talk transparently about money, whether it's an advisor or if you know someone that you trust that works within the financial services industry, or to talk transparently with someone to bounce your ideas off them, to get, you know, more to get a better sense of what it is that you should be doing. And then it's also about taking that first step, because without actually doing anything, you're not going to get anywhere. So it's really about starting. It's a starting to budget. It's starting to make a small investment every month. So it's just about starting that journey, starting that, taking it one step at a time. And yeah, so those are the kind of habits that you can use to build your confidence and to change your perspective on money. And even if you are already doing well within your journey, it's to then start implementing these things maybe on a more strategic level. So you have a portfolio, but you've maybe only been holding cash, or your cash is on call at a bank account, in a bank account. Diversify that portfolio, take some risk if you have many years to invest, or, you know, look at what the options are that are available to you outside of what you currently have. So those are kind of the things that you could start implementing.
Set some clear goals for yourself. Don't be afraid to ask some questions around your financial conversations and have these conversations with financial advisors and qualified experts. We can all change our behavioral patterns and our attachment styles to better suit our investment decisions. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Lauren Jacobs, the Senior Portfolio Manager at Satrix, for joining us to take a look at attachment styles and how they could potentially affect your investment behavior.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's Executive Lounge time on a Wednesday, and we always have the privilege of speaking to some really good executives and getting to know them beyond their day-to-day responsibilities. This week's executive has taken the time and the effort to drive all the way to studio to come and join me in studio, and perhaps that could be as a result of the fact that he might just be testing out some new products that they own. I'm joined in studio by the Managing Director at SuperQuick, Michael Humphreys, to take a look at his life beyond supplying Southern Africa with some of the best tires in the market. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for coming all the way to studio to join us. How did you get into the tire business? Was this just always the plan? Was this...
I don't know. I think I still ask myself that every day driving in. Eastern Free State born boy, grew up there, studied architecture. I'm a qualified architect, and now I operate a franchise business. I think I just, as an architect, got tired of building stores for people that's operations weren't working well. And then it's a bit of a polishing the turd. So really started focusing on what's wrong with the operations to fix businesses. And I think it's almost building in a different way. So in architecture, you build stores. I think in retail, you build businesses. And that's my passion. I actually realized I think I like running things rather than working for clients. So, yeah.
I'm absolutely curious now. Do you then design the layouts for the SuperQuick stores yourself?
Not at all. I get proper architects to do that. No, I manage the business. We get specialists to build the stores. Yeah, my job's to run a business.
What's the one thing you enjoy most about being able to run more than 200 franchise stores, being able to have the presence that you have in sub-Saharan Africa, and just what you do from a day-to-day basis?
I think it's coming up with things that really change a business, having an effect on a business. So implementing things that you understand will not only help your franchisees, but improve the experience for customers. You know, there's the South African business in fitment industry is very much same old, same old. And I think it's diversifying and creating something that makes you unique. And I think that's what we're setting out to do. So, yeah, architect, you want to be unique. So I love that side of it, finding new ideas that will make people come to you rather than anybody else.
Michael, what's the best tire brand on the market?
Bridgestone.
For obvious reasons, I'm guessing.
Yes, I think people underestimate what these manufacturers that are in tier one are, what it does to your car when you're driving and you say hit a pothole. You see the difference in good tires. They stay on your wheel. They make sure you stop safely. And it's actually a concern for me the way South African market is going with selling Chinese tires. You don't know where they've come from. You don't know how good they are. You hit a pothole and they pretty much leave to China again. They don't stay on your car. So, yeah, it is a risk people take. And we would advise them to stick to well-known brands of tires.
Michael, let's move away from the business side of things and get into some of the more interesting and controversial, I suppose, questions. Does pineapple belong on pizza?
If you ask my dad, yes. And I think growing up eating that, I'm quite happy to eat it as well. I know that'll be controversial.
Extremely controversial. We've had that on the show before. Michael, let's talk family. What are some of the best memories you have with your family that you're able to hold on to despite having the busy schedule that you do?
Yeah, I think growing up in Ficksburg, small little Eastern Free State town, my dad was the school principal, so heavily involved in growing up. And just the life you have. I mean, you have to play all the sports for the school, 200 kids in a school competing against schools that are 1,000 kids. So you play Friday, you play tennis, Saturday you play rugby, Sunday you play cricket, and you've got to play. There are not enough kids to make up the team. So that was really great, having my parents, my mom's an English teacher, having them at school all the time was really nice. And just the environment in a small town was really great. And then I think the experience of finishing studying, and then like everybody else my age, we went off on our 2-year holiday working permits to the UK, was a great learning experience. I think it broadens your horizons, teaches you a lot of life lessons. I think it was my army growing up quickly. Being in London and not having a place to stay really makes you grow up quite quickly. So, yeah, I just think I've been quite lucky. My dad has a motto, never, ever give up. And I think throughout my life, that's been something I've lived towards. And, yeah, I've been very blessed. Nice small town upbringing, went to a big city, lived in overseas for 14 years, back in South Africa, loving it. Yeah, I think we've got a great country. I think we've got a few things to sort out, but in general, we have a great life here.
Michael, what was the one thing you missed the most when you were living abroad?
Oh, being able to play golf without it raining. Yeah, I'm not too bothered about the weather. Biltong's nice to have in a local store, but it's also, I think, South African culture. A braai on a Saturday, you can make jokes about your friends. In the UK, you don't make jokes about other people. You make jokes about yourself. So, yeah, it's just that whole cultural thing that we have going. Mm. Book Fridays, things like that, that you can't have when you're living abroad.
South Africa's cultural experience certainly is a unique one that continues to draw many people from around the world to come and experience it. Probably because it's the best in the world. And that's probably a biased view, but we'll hold on to it. Michael, let's look at some of those life lessons. You touched on the fact that your father has quite an interesting motto, and I want to get your thoughts around what life lessons you would want to impart on a younger generation, the next generation, those that might be looking for a bit of inspiration, looking for a bit of pearls of wisdom, so to speak. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I think it's the age-old thing of nothing comes without hard work. You're going to have tough times. Just persevere. Never, ever give up, and you will get there. When you're at your lowest, probably you're learning the most lessons. So stick it out. Something good will come along, and you just got to be right for that.
Michael, what's your fondest memory of life before working?
Life before working. Is that student life? Because that was a blur. Yeah, it's that school camaraderie of, you know, we were two schools in Ficksburg, Ficksburg High, playing RTS Ficksburg. And that those 20 guys in a change room before the team run onto the field is really, really things that you remember. It's like these guys I grew up with. It's your last game in matric. You remember things like that.
Michael, what's your favorite food after a round of golf?
It's a biltong snack.
Okay.
I'm not very picky on food, so biltong is perfect for me. Yeah, but it's just sitting around reminiscing on the round. Those putts get longer, the drives get longer, the hitting it out of the rough gets more tricky. So it's just, yeah, sitting around. You generally in a golf game only spend time with a guy in the cart with you. So sitting around after the game, you actually sit around the table again with the four guys that you played golf with. So, yeah, it's just nice sitting there having a chat. And it's generally not about work always. So that's the nice thing is golf gets you away from your work environment.
From humble beginnings to leading a continental business and to showcasing some of the very best that South Africa has to offer to the world. Thank you so much once again to Michael for coming into studio, joining us for this conversation and allowing us to get to know him a little bit better. Michael Humphreys, the Managing Director at Superquick, joining us for our Executive Lounge.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And that's it for today, folks. That's the show. If you've missed any of the conversations, you know exactly where you can catch up on them. It is coming up to 7 o'clock. Greg Hurst is standing by to give us the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team, which means from my side, good night.